You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 10th September. We've got Chinese export-import data due in a bit. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mateta Tulari from RMB. AVI results, really strong. They got their volumes growing, and they've always protected margins. So when your margins are good and you get volumes, things really work. INJ, disappointing. Evan Walker from 361 Asset Management. Retail stocks, we're seeing results, we're seeing trading updates. What's his take? And Sean Kelly from Parity Wealth Managers, the S&P 493, in other words, excluding the Mag 7. Can they perform, can they outperform the Magnificent 7? Is it their turn to shine? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: from grey list to clear a conscience by next October. The more optimistic view is they could exit grey listing in June of next year. Business Day: Sun International prepares to fight a tobacco bill. Group says proposed law goes too far and poses risk to profitability of their casinos. We've seen this in other markets. The banning of tobacco hurts gambling. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1.2%, NASDAQ up 1.3%. Over in the East, it's mixed. We've got Sydney down 0.33%, Tokyo and Hong Kong both up 0.1%, and Tencent down 0.5%. Commodities are pretty much all green. Gold, 2,532. Brent is red at 71.80. PGMs green, platinum 9.46, palladium 9.43. The Rand is 17.89. Bitcoin, 56,700. Top 40 opening call, we're looking for a red open, but 210 points or 0.33% weaker.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mateta Tulari. He's head of FX execution, RMB. Mateta, appreciate the early morning. The AVI, I mean, for years, it's been tough out there, but they've managed to protect margins. This has really helped as volume started to come through to the point that it's not that just the numbers were good. They also found the space to go and give a special dividend, a good set of numbers.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, you're right. I mean, just yesterday we saw AVI share price rising about 6% to its highest intraday level since January 2019. And now, this is especially after the food packaging company reported earnings that really did beat expectations. Now, financial year 2024 delivered a really pleasing performance in a very challenging environment. I mean, if you think about it, the consumer is under pressure. There's increasing competition in all categories. Unreliable municipal infrastructure that is obviously impacting their manufacturing sites. We've got a weaker rand and also rising material costs. But if you also look at, you know, the other line item that I saw there was the direct cost of load shedding for them, mainly in the first half of the year, was around 33 million rand. So that is obviously quite a significant number. But like we know, there is lower power cuts in the second half of this year. But also, they really posted a strong annual profit, and I suppose it is really getting a boost from all the price hikes that they had in the food and beverage brands. And I mean, that reported a 22% increase in pre-tax profit that is landing them at around 3 billion rand for the financial year that has just ended for them. That is up from 2.5 billion from the previous year. Now, if you look at all the price increases in all categories, that helped offset mounting cost pressures for them. But like you said, INJ and their personal care businesses, those were really dealt a blow, as the frozen fish business really experienced poor catch rates and also the constrained abalone markets. And I mean, also just from a personal care unit, consumers are curbing spending. So obviously that did hit them. But also, just if you're an AVI holder, I mean, they have declared a special dividend. You know, that is really something that is quite significant. I mean, that is up to around 2.80 rand per share. And also, I mean, looking ahead, I mean, the company has said that they're going to start looking at a share buyback program, which is very interesting for AVI. And I suppose also for them, it's really remaining focusing on optimizing their return on capital and also sustaining this margin position that they have and trying to achieve growth in all their underlying businesses. But like we know, the trading environment going forward still is really going to be remaining challenging given the currency volatility and the uncertainty that we have from a local perspective and also a global perspective. Significant inflation numbers. I mean, we obviously still watching across the board from producer price inflation and also the consumer inflation numbers and also interest rates. Like we know, everybody's watching them and also the financial state of South African consumers. So for AVI, a great set of numbers. And I suppose if you're also an AVI shareholder, also smiling all the way to the bank.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at the share price. The stock has done incredibly well, what, 50% in about a year. And then that giant dividend on top of it, just for the heck of it, as you say. Good set of numbers. Challenging environment, but really, really good numbers. But yeah, to Laurie, RMB, appreciate the early morning.
Attention, all investors and finance enthusiasts. Get ready for the annual Money Summit, Africa's largest and most influential savings and investment event. Join me, Jeremy Maggs, on Tuesday, the 10th of September at the Sandton Convention Centre as we connect with over 100 top chief executives and industry leaders across 20 exciting conferences and forums, all in one incredible day. Secure your spot now. Register online at www.moneysummit.co.za for free with the code MONEYWEBGUEST. This is your chance to be part of Africa's premier savings and investment event. Don't miss it.
MONEYWEB now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Evan Walker. You find him, of course, at 361 Asset Management. Evan, appreciate the time. Sort of retail results been coming out. I've been on leave, so some of them I've only had a high-level look at. But if you look at it more broadly, we're getting the results, we're getting trading updates. How's it come relative to expectation? Because certainly for the period, which is going to be mostly to end June, 6 months or year, consumers still been under pressure.
Yeah, a lot of pressure, Simon. I mean, we know all the load shedding stories in the base. We obviously know a weak consumer, high interest rates, obviously unemployment, and all the negativity going with South Africa. A bit more positivity since election, obviously. A little bit more, you know, sort of forthcoming good information out of South Africa, and obviously the potential for rates to come down. But certainly a mixed bag of results. Obviously, the standout results were from ShopRite, but that was mostly known about. I mean, slightly weaker than the market had anticipated, just given the dividend was up 7.5%. But I think they've been conservative on some very, very big CapEx program still going forward, and they really are outspending their competitors 3-1. So, you know, still a stellar result from ShopRite, still the one to own, and still the sort of most constructive in the sector. If you're looking, you know, both them and Clicks looking on a sort of forward 2-3 year view, you can still see earnings growth. You know, on the balance of the retailers, you know, a relatively poor result from Woolworths came about by quite a significant slide in their country road operations in Australia. That was disappointing. They've had a struggle there, and I think they're going to have to reinvent themselves at country road a little bit. It's a really good business, a good brand. We've been knowing that sort of semi-affluent end of the market. It's been decimated a little bit with higher rates. So, you know, and obviously people not returning to work as fast, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's a business I'm sort of struggling to get my head around whether they can fix that business. Mm. And, you know, even the Woolworths clothing business per se, again, a sort of semi-affluent market, a lot of back-to-work clothing in the Woolworths stable. You know, you're just not sure of those growth elements in the apparel business. The food business continuing to do well in a relatively tough SA environment.
You mentioned clothing from Woolies. Of course, there's the other clothing guys, Truers, Fashini, Mr. Price. Certainly, the price action has been great on some of those, but I don't know if we're seeing it come through that strongly in results yet.
No, nothing at all. I mean, the price actions are a little bit euphoric for us, Simon. I mean, Mr. Price from the lows is up 50% on purely just re-rating. I mean, earnings was there, but I mean, you know, this is a business, even as quality as Mr. Price is, I mean, this is a business that's really only compounded earnings 3% a year for the last 5-6 years. It hasn't really done much, you know, but the market's anticipating a big year for Mr. Price next year. Now, the jury's still out. You know, we're coming into a very weak base. We saw the Fashini update gross margins, funny enough, are still trending quite well. That's holding it up. I think the guys have been quite resilient not to discount in an environment where they've seen obviously the pressure from ports and getting inventory into the market. That's held them up a little bit, funny enough. The negativity around distribution has held up their gross margins, but certainly the top line from an actual spending point of view has been very weak. Fashini's numbers overall were down sort of 2.5% for the first 21 weeks, which wasn't great. And again, the trading update, or the forward-looking update from Truworths after a very disappointing 6 months from Truworths, we were expecting a bit more out of them because they were actually quite bullish at the half year.
Yeah.
Michael Mark, you know, he was very bullish, came out and said he was really looking forward to a very good program. He had a late winter. Obviously, we know some of the story there, but it was a disappointing result from Truworths. And again, trading quite weakly into the start of the next 12-month period.
You mentioned Clicks there. Is Clicks still the preferred versus Dis-Chem?
I think so. I think, you know, they're just out-executing Dis-Chem still. Dis-Chem, it's a great business. Dis-Chem, don't be one. But from a pure cost-to-income ratio, Clicks just outperforms them on just metrics. Not so much on top-line growth, Simon, but just on pure metrics, yeah. On productivity levels, they way outperform them. I mean, you know, Dis-Chem's got a lot of work to do still on its cost base. It's a great business, but it's a big box format. It carries a lot more staff, carries a lot more, obviously, you know, dispensary, a lot more pharmacists, et cetera, in the dispensary. So it's a different profile business, and you've got to obviously take it from whence it comes. But I think there's a lot of opportunity still in the Dis-Chem business to obviously profile a little bit more efficiently over the coming years. And I think you'll see that. They've invested heavily in distribution, in logistics. And those were big costs which are in the base now for Dis-Chem. So, you know, hopefully a business where we can see a little bit more efficiencies come through over the next 2-3 years.
In looking forward, more generally, I mean, you mentioned a consumer under pressure, but we've had the election. Eskom is supplying electricity. Inflation's down. We hopefully get rate cuts in a couple of weeks. We got the two-pot money, which by accounts is already flowing. Are these retail counters kind of already pricing that in? I mean, you mentioned Mr. Price had a stellar run.
I mean, we've got a lot of positivity coming, we know. But on the other side of the equation, we've got commodity prices, especially platinum, which is weak. We've got a commodity sector under pressure, and we've still got administered prices, electricity up 10-odd percent or nearly 12 or 15. You know, you're feeling it now. Even your water bills, you're starting to feel it. I mean, middle-class consumers in South Africa even wear rate hikes, and this rates-cutting cycle to me is going to be a little shallow. It's not going to be very deep. I think US inflation is still going to be running plus twos, growth of twos. So, you know, we're going to get a 4% there. So we've got about 1.5% in this cutting cycle, which is obviously going to aid the consumer, but we don't think it's going to be a 2-3 or 4% cutting cycle, which could really get this consumer firing, given the fact that we have, you know, significant administered costs coming the way of the consumer as well. But there are positives. Food inflation's coming down. Petrol prices are coming down. We just got to get this macro going again and get some employment here. We know that, Simon.
Yeah, employment, GDP, those are the two real cornerstones that we're not yet seeing. Hopefully we will, but it's not there yet. We'll leave it there. Evan Walker, 361 Asset Management. Always appreciate the time.
And that's our poll, LinkedIn and Twitter. What's your take on local retail valuations? I mean, certainly they've had a strong run. That said, they maybe got some benefit there. Have your vote. Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting now with Sean Kelly. You find him, of course, at Parity Wealth Managers. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. Taking big picture, I suppose, at first, we've got the debate between Kamala and Donald Trump this evening. What's market expecting if Trump gets a second term in winning the November election?
Morning, Simon. Great to be on. And it's an excellent question. I think although former President Trump hasn't yet fully outlined his formal economic plan, his priorities remain clear: deregulation, lower taxes, and opposition to green initiatives. And if we look at his first term, we saw that he slashed the corporate tax rate from 35 to 21% and lowered individual taxes across the board. And he's now signaling that a potential further cut in corporate taxes to 15%. And the impact of this is relatively straightforward. Lower taxes tend to boost real output growth and corporate profits. So they're considered bullish for equities. And we witnessed this during his first term with the so-called Trump trade, when the S&P 500 surged by 67% and the NASDAQ by 135% during his first term. On the other hand, he launched a tariff war against China in 2018, lifting the tariff rate from 4 to 25%. And he's recently hinted at increasing this up to 60%. So the net result will largely depend on whether his radical proposals are just political noise or something that will be followed through and become actual policy. Regardless, it will impact all sectors of the broader economy.
Does that take, because I take your point, particularly on the tax and the like, that we've seen a sort of the Magnificent Seven, which has kind of left the S&P 493, the remaining stocks behind to a degree. Does that give us some thinking that we might see some rotation out of tech and into other industries and sectors as they can benefit?
We certainly think so. I think, you know, the recent shifts in favorable economic data pointing to lower inflation with future interest rate cuts combined with recent quarterly earnings indicate that perhaps AI spending may take longer to pay off than originally expected. And investors are starting to rotate their positions from the Magnificent Seven into the other 493 stocks making up the S&P 500. And I think from our side, we think they're sort of three potential key factors for the 493 outperforming the Mag 7 in the near future. Firstly is the valuation gap. As of early September, the average PE ratio of the Magnificent 7 stood around 40 times, in contrast to the average PE ratio of the remaining 493 companies at 16 times. And 16 is a lot closer to historical norms, offering more attractive entry point. And the stark difference in valuation suggests that much of the future growth potential of the tech giants is already priced in, leaving the 493 with more upside potential. And secondly, the potential impact of a lower interest rate environment, whereby participants believe that lower interest rates could significantly benefit the broader market, particularly sectors that rely on debt financing, such as industrials, real estate, and of course, consumer discretionary. And then lastly, I think the potential shift in growth and value strategies, where historically markets go through cycles where growth stocks lead for a time, followed by periods of value stocks. And of course, after years of dominance by the tech-heavy growth stocks, some analysts expect a market rotation towards value.
I take your point 100%. A last question, a more sort of broad general outlook. I mean, we're expecting rates to start coming down in the US. That's what, just a week and change away. And your general outlook on markets?
Yeah, I think lower rates will likely reinvigorate consumer demand and corporate investments, driving growth in sectors like retail, construction and manufacturing, areas where the S&P 493 has more exposure than the tech-heavy Mag 7. But it's important to also note that in market volatility, like we're observing now leading up to elections and changes in monetary policy, defensive sectors tend to outperform due to the stable earnings. So sectors such as healthcare, consumer staples and utility make up a substantial portion of the S&P 493, and we believe they have plenty of catching up to do. I suppose the question we asking ourselves is, you know, have the benefits of AI been fully reflected in tech stock valuations, or does the broader S&P 493 stand to gain more in light of the evolving political and monetary landscape?
Yeah, no, that's a fair shout. And of course, it is. Elections are volatile and markets have been a little more volatile perhaps than usual, but we'll see how that plays out. Sean Kelly, Parity Wealth Managers, always appreciate the early morning time.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. We're chatting with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth yesterday, talking around global markets, as we were there with Sean. They're seeming a little bit spooked. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but there certainly has been some selling. There has been some worries. We had good days in the US and Asia overnight. Question we had was, should we be worried? And the answers were evenly split, which I suppose exactly plays into the volatility we're seeing. A third of you were saying, yep, trouble ahead. A third was saying, no, it's just a wobble, all will be fine. The rest of you were saying, look, I stay invested regardless. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Don't chase returns.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the Money.